This is a production of Cornell University.
They would own all the infrastructure in the store, and it wouldn't be open to any grad students unless you were sitting by your not on your day, and I'm going to answer any questions you have about the project.
Wait, what do you mean by didn't have access to storage on Cornell property?
Yes,
but how was that Cornell property that they had?
Because the other record room is paying all of the infrastructure, so I guess you could walk in the store and leave a Cornell property, but the undergraduate money would have paid for all of the inventory, the fact that there's a space there. And so as part of us justifying money from the undergraduates, we're saying that it's only open to the undergraduates.
It sounds like a really interesting idea. The first thing I'm thinking, actually I work with the Food and Security Survey, so I know that it's about it, and it's just based on user recall. Wouldn't that just incentivize people to lie and get their food insecure? Not that I'm going to tell people, but it just seems like that kind of is a problem.
Yeah, and that's entirely possible, but with SNAP benefits, which is food stamps, it's now called SNAP, they found that there's only fraud rates of about 10% nationally, and that does ask for more detailed information, so we've estimated that about a fifth of the undergraduate student body is needy, so if we find that a lot of students are needy, we'll institute audits and ask for more information. We have a lot of faculty on our board, and so students also have to meet with them before we give them discounts if that came up as an issue.
And how big is it compared to what?
It's about 600 square feet, so it's a lot smaller. It's more of like a 7-Eleven model, but we're going to focus on fresh foods, canned goods, frozen meats, dairy items, the kind of thing you need to stock at a Bayer pantry or a Bayer refrigerator. Because prepared meals are already available in canned goods, so we'll be focusing on what you can't get on the internet.
So, and it's definitely a call that you guys are looking at food insecurity. I don't know if you had a chance to look at super deep because it was student run grocery store that Cornell Progressive has written about. So I want to ask you about some of the questions that you bring up. For example, that exchange for getting 501 C3 status, probably 8% of the income has to go for potential for transformative action. The fact that corporate is going to be Restar opening up also that will offer a 15-18% discount for students to show that our financial aid. And then I guess also I'm wondering, like, how would you imagine that you would say the client?
So three bullet points about the.
For example, that just sort of aligns the fact that 80% of the income has to go for the relationship to transformative action.
Okay, so for those of you who are familiar, the Center for Transformative Action is a nonprofit social justice incubator that operates at Miami Healthcare Hall, and we recently funded them as one of their projects. So we give 8% of our revenue to them, and in exchange they're our fiscal sponsors, so they maintain the nonprofit status. They review all of our financial transactions so that they fit the nonprofit status. They also do all of the tax and auditing services. And so it's like a fee for service, but it's more fluid than that. So that's, if we didn't pay them 8% of our revenue, then we would have to do those things ourselves. So that's relative to other small nonprofits, they usually spend about 15% of their income on fundraising and other associated costs. So view that way.
Okay, and so the other question was also how is this going to be much better than the Daystar that will offer the chance for students that
are not on the actual. Okay. So we talked to Daystar and then of our plan. They've been giving us advice on how to manage volunteers, etc. And their model is more focused on natural and organic foods, which often are more expensive. Our primary focus is low cost. So we will offer different kinds of products. And they'll be in college towns, like down the street, like past 7-Eleven down the street. And some students have said that that's even too far, like they won't walk that far. Versus their loved ones on the way back from campus to college towns. So we do have a bit of a location advantage, and we'll be offering this project.
Can I ask about raising money?
Oh, yeah. And also, how do you imagine that we're raising money? I see that for the essay, it's proposed to be coming out of this Student Health Student Fund, and you take about 25% of its principal, and there's a lot of questions and idea about the fact that it would then impact a lot of other programs in the essay, but
two questions. One is if you could elaborate on your professional guidance that you're getting. You mentioned Green Star and faculty, and you could talk more about that. Mm-hmm. And the other question is, what is like the exit plan for if you realize the grocery store is not really working out the way you intended it? What does that look like, and how does that kind of be constructed?
I'd answer that. You can also speak about the administration part of it.
Your first question. Yeah, who is your professional guidance in the faculty?
Okay. Okay, so we're working with the Center for Transformative Action. They have full-time staff who have experience running social justice projects, working with administrators, etc. So we've been looking to them for guidance on connecting with the community. And they've also dealt with some student workers before, so they know how to handle hiring and student turnover, which is one of the issues we have to address. We've also been working with Life Changing Labs, which is a nonprofit incubator that operates out of the Hot Shop in Collegetown. So they've been giving us guidance on fundamental business approaches for startups. Through them, we've also had legal counsel and financial counsel from professionals who work with them. We've talked with Alicia Gaines and Jamie Dalhite, who are professors in human ecology and human security. We've talked with Campus Life, Community Relations in terms of the administration. We talked with the president of the board of Green Star, Paul Hume. We talked with one of the trustees, John Alexander, who has a lot of experience with localism in Ithaca and food companies in Ithaca, starting them, watching them fail, watching them stay over the years. And that's just a good list. We met with over 30 different people this summer. I have the list on the slide.
Also, you said you were one of four directors. Who were the other three?
So Max Levine and Jonah Johnson are both members of the student assembly, and they came up with the idea for this year. And we're here. Come back. And then in April, they hired me and another student, Robert Hendricks, and we're the executive directors. So we handle more of the day-to-day operations so that they can focus on fundraising and administrative relationships.
And my last question, if you could talk about if, so if the funding model, if GPSA does decide to get on board with it, it might be over a several year thing, how will you kind of benchmark how well the grocery store is doing, and if it starts to kind of not go in the direction that everyone had hoped, how will you recognize that, and how will you gratefully kind of
So in terms of benchmarking, GPA does not allow any of their projects to operate at all. Because that takes money from other projects, which is number one illegal, and number two in very bad form. So if they will benefit for us whether or not we operate in a law. And in that case, if that were to happen, we would shift toward more of a food bank model and emphasize our programming to give students life skills, again through cooking classes, budgeting classes, seminars on food security, and social research projects about food insecurity. Just to increase the national knowledge on food insecurity at colleges, which right now holds, there's 5 papers on it. And then we talked, one of our advisors, Natasha Thompson, is the leader of the food bank of Santa Pierce. And so she said that if we can show that half of the users of the store are food insecure, then we can buy food at very low cost to them and then distribute it for free as a food bank.
So you mentioned at the beginning that your survey indicated that 1 in 5 is Cornell students with the graduate students and undergraduates combined.
That was just undergraduates.
That was undergraduates.
Yeah. So that survey went out to all 14,000 undergraduates and then about 3,400 responded. And of those, 18% said they skip meals. Actually, 14% said they skip meals at least occasionally. 5% said they skip meals sometimes, and then another 3% said they skip meals often.
Sure. And so, do you have any other information about these people? Like, who are they, or like, how do you know that they're the ones who are actually using the school?
We filled out our own survey as part of a contest to name the store, and so we looked at the data of students who said they were food insecure, who said they might shop at the store. And we looked at that together, and it looks like about a few hundred who are food insecure might shop at the store every month.
which we want to give them maybe about 10% discount. And if our estimates are correct, then they would be saving a total of about $3,400 a month on those discounts.
Is there any plan to do that kind of research within the graduate population? Or is that kind of outside of
your own person? Yes. It's not one of our priorities right now, but the research professors that we talked to have brought that up, and they want to dig deeper into the data. We want to look at the demographics and pulse surveys and look at whether that statistic is as accurate as we think it is and do further research.
Thanks so much for your presentation. It sounds like you really have tackled a deep project head on and really gotten a lot of good advisory support, and the fact that you're able to mesh into the nonprofit is also a really great thing, and something I've been involved in other organizations, I know how difficult that can be. I guess I have two questions for you. The first one is, so I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more to some of the financial aid donut holes or boot holes or whatever that are causing this food insecurity on campus, because as you said, at a high financial aid institution such as Cornell, it might be kind of hard for some people to fathom, especially when Cornell says things like, our media students won't have to really pay anything, which turns out to be true a lot of times. So I'm wondering if you could elaborate on that.
Can I take a question from the
Yeah, point? Sure.
Okay.
And then I have one more.
Yeah. So we've met with financial aid repeatedly, and they recognize that this problem does exist, despite the financial aid they already give. This conversation has mostly been about undergraduates. But what we've seen from anecdotes primarily is that students receiving the most financial aid, all of their expenses are covered for the most part. But that only applies to 50% of students who receive any financial aid. Another 15% receive only loans. And so often students will cut back on loans, have less debt, or they'll have their financial aid package, but if they break their computer, or if they have a health problem, all the money gets shifted around and food is the first thing to go. So then, for example, one of the people on our staff, his parents make upwards of $100,000 a year, and he receives only minimal wage aid. But because his parents are already strapped, he supports all of his food through his own salary and his on-campus jobs, and an undergraduate level is not very substantial. And so he finds it's usually people in the middle who may receive some aid, or whose parents come from more comfortable backgrounds, who are suddenly food insecure for the first time in college. And then, as well, I have friends who do receive a lot of aid. It's mostly covered, but again, food is the first thing to go. And they're often stressed because of their financial background, and it's harder to have jobs and support.
My second question has to do with your funding and labor model. So you said, if this place is operating at a loss, then you would shift to more of a food bank kind of model. And I'm just wondering, why isn't that what you're going for in the first place? If your actual goal is to address food insecurity on campus, why are we still making people pay for food if the goal is to really address food insecurity?
Yeah, that's a good question.
And then, the other concern I have is, with a volunteer labor model, how sustainable is that really?
So in terms of the first question, I'll address the labor model first.
Okay.
We talked with other groups who have a labor-based model. I don't have the data point exactly right now, but basically, if we continually remind volunteers of our mission, then there aren't that many, the rate of attrition isn't that high. And for example, the student-run grocery store at Georgetown, which is very similar to our model, they've been student-run for 20 years, they have a grocery store that's about 800 square feet, about the same size. Their attrition rate is about 2%. They are paid, so that's a different setup than ours, but in terms of student turnover, they don't see very much of that. And then these volunteers will also offer discounts to volunteers who work in the store and who serve on our director staff, which is 36 students right now, by the way. And it's a learning experience for a lot of students who want business experience, who want to get involved. Everyone on our staff is extremely passionate about the mission, and so their involvement is almost taken for granted. Like, I don't see this as work, it's something I do every day, which I know isn't true for everyone, so we'll address it with continued motivation and reminders of the mission, as well as other incentives that can help.
And why not the food bank model, why in the store model?
So we get asked that question a lot.
Yeah.
And so when Emma and Matt were talking to the experts on food insecurity, that was brought up. And at this point, it looks like food pantries don't address the underlying needs. So yes, it's a temporary fix. When the food bank distributes, which is usually like permission to pay every 2 weeks, it's not all the time. Yes, they provide food, but it's not usually fresh produce, because that's very hard to do with that kind of aggregate food and then distribute occasionally kind of model. And it doesn't really empower students beyond that temporary fix. So with a grocery store, it can generate its own revenue, so it's a more sustainable model in general, and it empowers students to be made like all other students, regardless of food. That's part of the stigma piece, which I haven't addressed yet. At Cornell, a university like this, it's difficult to admit someone has needs, maybe more so than other areas, and so having just a normally functioning chain grocery store with an anonymous discount addresses the fact that there's a stigma for users with food pantries. We've done a full budget, and our director of finance, she worked with Aldi this summer. She's going to be a general manager at Aldi next year, so she has more experience in grocery store than other students. But she estimated our sales at about $50,000 per month, and that's based on some market analysis that our team did, based on where students live, how it's usually spent on groceries.
Have you actually done like a general survey on this kind of stuff with like the population of actual people in that budget?
Yeah, so the survey sent out for the main contract including questions about that. And his question is whether we send out surveys to see if students would use the store, how much they would spend, etc.
I guess also giving you that having their like, you know, actual finances they have, like the
right. We haven't asked for any financial data from the students about whether or not they have needs because that information is very sensitive. We don't hire any people for that. And financial aid is not really something the information to us. So our questions are more experience-based. Like, for example, the food insecurity survey asks about the experience of being food insecure. Like, one of the questions is, have you ever bought food and found that it was too much? Which gets more at, have you ever had to sacrifice the quality or amount of food because of financial needs? That's what we asked, and so we found that need does exist based on our survey, and that students would spend about $30 a week on groceries, and just about 60% that they would all use before.
Have you reached out to potential suppliers or other grocery stores in the region for setting up the supply chain?
Yes. We've talked to local distributors such as Portland Produce, F&T. We're waiting to hear back from Tech and Cisco, which those are, you've probably seen their names on trucks on campus. They're now present, mostly serving to streetlights on campus. I'm also chair of guiding committee, and we're closely with dining, so I've talked to them a little bit about which suppliers they would recommend. Their scale is a lot bigger, so we've talked about maybe piggybacking on their suppliers. Green Start said we can use their suppliers as well, which would make sense if they also have a location close to ours. So we're not looking into that, but yes, we can use their suppliers.
I was wondering, besides gathering data on the experience with food scarcity and how those experiences have to have those experiences.
process of collecting that kind of data, our director of food insecurity, that's her mission, is to talk to students who are food insecure and find out what kind of food they want in the grocery store, how we can serve them, and what kind of financial model they can expect from us. So we don't have that data yet, but she's currently working on it. And we also tend to work with student groups to determine our product mix so that it covers the various ethnicities and cultural groups that want different foods in the grocery store.
Usually I know very little about the undergraduate money searches, but I've got a couple questions. In terms of the amount of money that students are spending on groceries, how does that compare to the available funding plans that they can potentially invest in? And also, do you have a sense of whether the students that are experiencing food scarcity are primarily those that are living on or off campus?
Okay, so her question was about formalized meal plans, and all of the meal plans that are available to students in dorms are at least $2,000 up to $3,000.
And
per semester, yeah. Versus cooking for yourself at maybe $50 a week is significantly less. So my personal experience and among my friends, meal plans are the first thing to go. And then students living off campus, they have cheaper meal plans, maybe $1,000 or $800, but that only gets them maybe one meal a week in the dining hall. So what's left is Greek meal plans, if you're living in a Greek-like house, and cooking for yourself, based on the cheaper. Yeah.
And then my second question was, do you have a sense of whether those experiencing food scarcity are predominantly on campus or off campus?
So we estimate it's more off campus, just because students living off campus often pay for their own rent, and there's a couple $1,000s they need for rent in a year that usually takes care of the whole system. So we're also figuring for students who mostly live in college town and maybe below off campus just because of our own location. So yes, off campus. They also tend to have teachers more so than people living in college.
If the conversation has mostly been about undergraduates so far, is anyone looking into maybe looking at the prices in RPCC and noise and why they're so high for groceries?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. So her question is why prices are so high at existing on-campus convenience stores like in RPCC and noise. And I've talked to the procurement officer at noise, and it is difficult to get things on campus, which is why we're working with Portland Produce and the other ones that already have a presence on campus. They also offer really low minimums, so we can order to the shelves, we don't have to deal with a lot of storage, we can order daily, and delivery constantly.
Are those two also non-profit businesses?
No, those are for profit.
Okay.
And Cornell Dining has a high markup because they have a really extended administrative staff. Most of them, there's a lot of them, they're full-time employees that probably make a full-time employee salary. Versus, you'll have student workers who work for either free or work study, which we would pay 10% of their salary at about $13-$14 an hour. So that's about $200.
Hmm. Yeah. I was wondering if there's something about your plan for advertising or basically getting the word out to students about this. In particular, I mean, if you think about these students, there's a stigma against being in the student secure. What's your concern for that?
Mm-hmm. So this question is about how we can get the word out to student secure students. And just right off the bat, we have a website. We have a Facebook page. You can go to the website right now if you have your phone. And it talks about what you do. So there's the link to the survey to qualify for a discount to the website. But we'll also have a presence on campus and spread the news to word of mouth and for hiring, social media. The traditional marketing avenues that a lot of students use. And then we'll also partner with other food-related groups on campus. And we're going to look into partnering with the nutrition counseling at Gannett and the support team. And also our lead advisor, Dr. Renee Alexander, works with a lot of food insecure students because she's the dean of diversity and academic affairs at 66 Thurston, where they have a very small food pantry that she loves to support herself. And she also hosts dinners with free meals, one series of free meals. So she knows a lot of students who are already doing this here, who will be working with her.
So one more question.
I just have a question about what you're doing for free, since most undergraduate students are away, but some undergraduate students are still on campus.
And so, because we've been working mostly with an undergraduate model at this point, we had planned to run down an inventory of clothes during breaks. But with graduate support, we can look at having a skeleton staff and staying open. Honestly, we were planning to close.
So, thank you all, and for the session, we will consider. From next academic year,
So that will be for like 2016, 2017, 2017 to 2018. So the next 2 years, what the activity should be if we get this call. So currently, the way it happens is that the 65% of the money goes into these 11 groups, and the other group, which is the GPSFC, gets 35%. So in the $81, $52.65 goes to like these violent funded groups, and about $28 goes to the GPSFC. These numbers are available online, and you can read them up. But the important thing for us to note I just marked in red these groups that are coming back for funding this year, which are asking for an increase. And so there will be some amount of debate on that. One is Cornell Cinema, which gets $10 currently. They want $7. So you will probably hear from this group. There is Department of Athletics. They also want an increase of $1. Graduate student orientation currently gets $1 for every graduate of $10,000. They want $2 now, so that's doubling their allocation. And then there is International Student Union, which was before called the International Student Board. That is also asking for a slight increase. Last time we cut their funding, so this time there might be some amount of debate. So I kind of just wanted to point out some of these groups that will come back. It's just whole number rounded off. So they asked for $12 last time. We adjust the amount slightly, like GPSFC asked for like $2, but the way the numbers add up, we have to like cut down five cents or something like that. So I wouldn't like really call it like an increase, but this group, like 1.35 is a small amount, and 1.8 is a bigger amount for that, so it's a significant increase. Essentially, what's going to happen now is that these groups have submitted a violent funding application, so they've turned in all the documentation they need, all the supporting documentation with all the financial information to us, the appropriations committee. We will meet with all these groups by the end of September. So in the next couple of weeks, the appropriations committee will meet with each one of these groups, and then we'll find out what their exact requests are. Based on that, we hope to write a report and submit it to the GPSA and the groups that are applying for funding, hopefully sometime around fall break, maybe right after fall break or before, and then we'll present what the recommendations are on the October 26th meeting. At this point, because the groups also have been sent, our recommendation, if some group is unhappy with our recommendation, they will also present at the same meeting and say why they need to get more money. Hopefully that's the plan right now. And then we will then vote on the next meeting, which is the meeting on November 9th. All the funding has to be, the funding session has to be made by the end of the semester, but has to be presented to the GPSA at the fifth meeting, which is the November 9th meeting. So we should be hopefully done to that. That's all I had. If you had any questions, you can ask me now. I can answer. Okay.
This is a quick question. I just wanted to make sure that on that list, that was an exhaustive list.
That was all the groups that we had.
That's kind of related. You mentioned that the grocery store would be added to the activity fee. Would that be adjusting to the other groups, or is that?
This is something that we have to talk about when GPSA decides to fund. It is something we have to have an internal discussion about. They are a bit behind. Technically, these groups are supposed to submit a preliminary application in April, and then we approve it, and then they have to submit like 10 signatures right now, and then they have to come back to the GPSA, and then they have to. So there's a lot of procedure involved with that. So for them to do that, I think right now might be too difficult, but if it's a pressing need and if it's something that the GPSA would really like to support, there are other ways we might be able to do it, which is basically like use up some of our funds that are already there, or probably have them as an ad hoc committee under the GPSA, which we can control, and have increased our allocation by like a dollar or two, and that way we have like control. We can tell them, hey, you know what, this is not okay or something. We want this to be done, and we can meet with them every semester or something like that and see how they're progressing. that's another way where we can do it. Like we can basically say, instead of giving $2 to GPSA, we say we'll give them $4, and then we would control that $2 that goes into how we want to use the assembly.
Just to add on to that, when it comes to the grocery store, it's important to remember that we don't want them to become an official byline funded organization in perpetuity. The idea is that we allocate them a fixed amount paid over a specific set of time, and the funding is supposed to stop. They're not supposed to be, like, and the SA is not going to be doing continuous funding to them either. They're supposed to be self-sustaining. So if they did all those things and became an officially byline funded organization, there's no process by which we can officially tell them no. I mean, we can just basically say no and like zero out their funding, but it would be harder at that point. They would officially be allowed to apply for, you know, not like unending funding from us.
Right, and, it would be and then it's much easier for us to control it. So back to that. Yeah.
So for these groups that submit their application, do we take into account how much money they're getting from other sources when we decide?
Yeah, we do. We do. So basically what happens is they submit their complete budget for the last 2 years and what they define for the next year, and they have to list all the sources of income. Generally, like the graduate, like the SA funds some part of it, we fund some part of it. Those are the two primary sources of it, but then for Department of Athletics, it's also the university that funds it. So then we look at all those three numbers and together we decide, like, hey, is it worth our investment
for that?
And then we do
the previous slide, it said graduate school orientation, and that was a large number.
Yeah.
Was that
$12,000
or something?
Okay.
I couldn't see it.
Yeah.
$12,000
for
the
student?
No. And asking for two. And how much did that cost? My question is, why are we paying for that?
Okay. So currently, we can talk more about it when the orientation wants to do it. But essentially, right now, we fund them $1 because they do a lot of like activities like that are applicable for grad students. That's an important part of the graduate student experience. Once you come in, they are trying to expand. They want to do a lot of activities. But for now, I don't know internally how the funding works for them completely. Essentially, what we fund kind of just fund some of the activities like the ice cream social and things like that which are open to all grad students. And so those are important enough activities that we can fund. But we'll hear back from them and we can see if we want to fund them or not. I mean, that's something the appropriation committee always discusses, but you'll hear more about it when we present.
Can I just say something?
Yeah.
Because my heart kind of dropped when you said we had asked from the graduate school double. Because I didn't know we had asked for double, and so I pulled up my proposal. I'm still not sure we asked for double. So who's going to confirm what we're asking for? Because I just know that from orientation last year, the dean provided $9,848, and GPSA provided $6,539 for total expenses of $16,000 and something. And then this year, we spent about $18,500, and the dean provided $12,000, and GCSA provided $6,539. But I'm going to double check our work because I didn't realize I didn't think we were asking for double.
Oh,
so could we, could we revise that? Not you ask for
double.
No,
that's right. I think we can, like, basically, once you meet with appropriations, you'll figure that out.
Yeah.
And then, we can include that as part of the recommendation.
We're planning to work within the same budget, so I don't know what we can do with the double amount.
No, I mean, I know that this year there was an increase in expenses.
For what it's worth, 2 years ago, that you all got for $2. So it's at least consistent.
I thought, were you not giving us $2 already?
No, we were giving you $1 for sure.
I think we're planning to do it with the same budget, but I'll go back and talk.
Yeah, I mean, we can check you submitted the financial documents, so it should be pretty straightforward.
I just didn't want people going to bed tonight thinking the graduate school can't manage the budget.
No!
Let's have one more question.
Thank you.
Violent funding is that's a long process, so we will be coming back to this several times.
Okay, well, we have three people.
Take your payment session. So with these byline funding requests, are we just giving them unrestricted funds, or can it have caveats attached to it?
There are. So what happens is that in the fall, we set what the amounts are, and in the spring, we come back, and there are some criteria that they have to fill or satisfy. For example, we get gone a few years, you can have that every month, they have to do at least one GIS that they provide hot food. Something like that. I don't know if that's a caveat.
Are there ones attached to like Cornell Cinema gives us a discount?
Yeah, I mean, they do have something like don't increase the fee, don't increase the ticket price is one of them. Without talking to us for that, for aesthetics, they have to give like 200 like coffee tickets for specific fee reserved for gas within that discount price, something like that. It's something that they do. I'll talk to you.
No, I was just listening. I can't even read the black text.
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean,
I can't even put the
number. So we will be definitely revisiting filing funding. So those meetings that we will have to approve it on again, November
9th. No, October 26th I present. And so basically October 26th and November 9th are the two meetings that, well, November 9th all the voting members need to be present. But to get all the information on November 9th, you need to kind of attend the meeting on October 26th.
So mark your calendars, see you.
Okay.
Alright. And then next, we'll move into reports of the officers and committee chairs. So we're slightly behind schedule, so we'll try to keep these down.
Okay, I'll go. So from the executive committee, I just wanted to, one is notified that Jane Cookies, who's a voting member of the, from the biological science, has stepped down because she moved to the Geneva campus. So we will be having an election for a voting member at large, which means that anybody can run for it. I'm happy from biological science. We'll look at the next meeting. And secondly, I wanted to speak to you a little bit about the decentralization effort, effectively, that we've been trying to do over the summer. So we believe that for good representation, most fields should have strong field organization. So, and if you have field organization, what we've noticed is it's more likely that members come to the GPSA and represent their field. So what we're trying to do is that if there are any fields that you are aware of, you don't have field organization, or are having trouble starting up an organization, please reach out to us, and we will help you with the constitution, with your budget, any dressing and paperwork that is required. We start our experience way through this. I'll take questions. Okay. Going forward with that and the idea of funding, it is our opinion that right now the funding model the Bias Commission uses is a little bit outdated, and we're trying to fit all student organizations to one mold because effectively the way we go about it is if you want to bring in speakers, we give you a lot of money. If you want to have your own field money that's like 200. So off the large model, we're forcing you to have two speakers a semester, have one annual meeting at the end, and very formulaic, which probably, at least according to us, doesn't fit every field organization or every student organization. So we think it's a good time for us to have a look, revisit the funding guidelines, and maybe we can have a conversation about that during the semester. Maybe come up with new guidelines which make more sense.
So, with regards to including more field organizations, computer science and I think some of the other engineering fields are starting to have increasing number of grad students at the New York City Tech campus, and it's a little unclear to how they benefit from the GPSA since they're not here to get.
I can answer. So the New York City Tech students who are officially enrolled, the at New York City Tech, receive all of their activity fees back to them. So they pay an activity fee to us, we collect it from them, but then we send it all back in a lump sum to be administered by an organization local at New York City Tech, managed by students there. Now that is only for the master's students officially enrolled at New York City Tech. We're currently trying to figure out the problem of PhD students officially matriculated to Cornell campus that are at New York City Tech, because not just them, it's actually quite a large number of, not a surprising number, but there's a fairly large number of students or PhD students who are away from Ithaca, still paying the activity fee, and are trying to figure out, which is a complicated question. We're still working out over that. But there is, so for all these students that are only on campus, you know, they are getting that money back without it going to them. That is taken into account.
Cool. Operation. Okay, so hopefully everyone saw the email I sent out over the GPSA info list. Raise your hand if you didn't get an email about external and internal committee stuff. Okay. Ooh, four. Five. Oh, no. Don't leave until we make sure that you're on that list, because you should be on that list for a lot.
Can I just do it quickly on how they can get on? So if you go to the assembly page, it's assembly.cornell.edu. On the left side at the bottom, there's a shortcut, and they have multiple links under that. Go to request assembly listserv or something like that. Just request which listserv you want to be added to. You can be added to the non-voting, the field rep, or just the info list. Whichever one you want to be added to, it'll send us an email, and we'll approve you.
Perfect. Thank you. So we want to make sure you get on that list, because what I sent out was there are two links. So the Office of Assembly has put together an application form for applying for internal committee positions. So those are the ones that we have chairs for. If you are interested in joining those committees, or you've already talked to those chairs, it's kind of just more of a formality to make sure you're in the system everywhere you're supposed to be. So just go through, add your information, follow that link. I'll resend out these links. The second one is for the external committee positions. There isn't really a drop-down list. It's a Google form I made up. The thing is that the data as far as what all these committees are and where they exist and how many committees then, some of that is not very well nailed down. But there is a list in that email, and if one of the names strikes you, or you're interested in it, but you don't want to apply without knowing a little bit more about it, you can definitely send me an email. And so far, I've been pretty good about giving information back to people. However, I would encourage you to apply first and then decide not to do it later. Because we're trying to, we want to fill some of these positions, particularly the student health, it used to be a student health insurance plan, it's now the student health plan advisory committee. We want to fill that one as soon as possible, and then the codes and judicial conduct, or whatever, so we want to fill kind of feed that. So if you still have that email and you were thinking about a committee, please sign up for something soon, like really, really soon. So we can get on that, and then the operations staff will meet with me and be able to discuss those. But, yeah.
Should they afford it to their appeal?
Yes, by all means. All these positions are not just for you. I mean, please apply, and we kind of expect you guys to fill up the majority of the positions. But these are for all graduate students. Anyone can apply to them and fill them and be involved that way. However, there are some requirements that go along with this position, and this is also why we don't know in some cases, anything about these positions. And so this is a checklist. This is going through the GPSA byline and our bylaws, and I pulled out basically all the stuff that you're supposed to be doing as an external committee member. And it's not much, but mostly it's just you're supposed to let me, as the vice president for operations, know about what's going on your external committee. And so I have a plan for that. And so this is in there. In that email, so please take a look at that before you sign up for a committee and know that, you know, there are going to be some things expected of you. And then it references this external committee data sheet. And I'm an engineer, so I deal with data sheets. And this is what I'm doing. So all of our external committee positions, there is this thing here. And they are one page long. This is what the position is. This is how many people we appoint to that position. It has a small description with the professional contact info for those people. And then there's a little summary. This is my position, and this is why I filled it out. But it's basically saying, you know, it ranks everything from 1 to 5 on how much influence you have in this committee, and basically what your, like, time commitment is. And so it's very candid. Don't share this. Actually, it's public. Never mind. it says, yes, they're food at these meetings. They meet for an hour and 15 minutes once a semester. They explain basically what they do. This was a president's council on alcohol and other drugs. It's kind of, like I said, it's very informational. You don't have to do a lot of work. But that is two committee positions that we were supposed to staff. So after you serve on a committee, I ask for this information back
so that when other people are in your seat next year, they know what in the world is going on. So I'm putting these together for you, and I have these for some positions, so ask me about them. That is it.
Provisions in the turf code?
Yeah. This would be the last thing I did. I just wanted to put in a plug for the Student Health Insurance Advisory Committee. Francesca and I did that 2 years ago, and it's just a really important position. It's basically the university committee that makes the insurance policy and negotiates with the larger insurance companies. So, like, everything they do, even very small things, can have a very big impact on the whole graduate student body. So it's a really great learning experience and just a really important position.
And sorry, to add on to that, there is one more new committee that is separate from that, which is the Student Health Fee Advisory Committee. It's not the same thing. I don't know why, but I got an email about it a couple days ago. And that is a separate thing. And if you were involved in that fee business last semester and you would like to have a say in that, please talk to me about that as well. Yeah. Yeah, the insurance, this one, the student health insurance one.
And the CJC.
Yeah, and the CJC. I would like to staff those by noon tomorrow. So, actually, I would like to staff them now, I'm working with the operations staffing committee. We're going to figure out a way not to meet, but to approve the people for those positions ASAP. Everyone else will probably be approved. I'll have a big list by the next meeting. So if you're going to apply for a committee position, which you should, apply as soon as you can. Apply this week. Don't wait until the weekend. Thanks.
And then back to you. Finance Commission.
Hi. Again, the deadline for the funding budget to be reviewed next month is last Friday of this month, September 25th. And we're also looking for a few more committee members, so if you're interested in working with finance and funding administration, contact me or send an email at 8N669 for
an interview. Okay. Student advocacy.
So, not much to report. We're having our first meeting on Thursday at 6 p.m. in 294 A Clark, which is in the Physical Sciences Library, like room space. So, if you have any questions, please come see me out.
Yeah,
Rick, do you
have
any questions?
I have one question about how we can talk, potentially go after this year, but one thing that was brought up is that as a committee, we feel that it would be better if you met one-on-one with each group that's related to diversity in any way. So that's one thing that we're going to be working on the next couple months. So if you know of a group that we should be meeting with, get feedback from, please come let me know. So I'm going to be trying to come up with a list or that we're all going to, the committee is going to go reach out to. Next meeting is October 8th. If you're interested in joining us, please
look at us.
Program
report. Hey, everyone. I have three announcements. One, Daniel suggested to me a few weeks ago, which I thought was a really great idea, to have just a little, not necessarily mixer, but event amongst ourselves, so we all just don't come to meetings, see each other's faces, and not know each other at all. And maybe promote better communication between the schools. So I'm working on doing a like a little event. Daniel suggested hiking, but with the weather, which would be awesome. But with the weather, I'm not sure how long that is going to last. So if you have any suggestions or ideas, my email is amm534. Secondly, we do have the date in the schools for the fall mixers at the Big Red Barn. September 24th is going to be engineering, math, and physics, and I will send out an email to Chris at the Big Red Barn, who will advertise, and the field representatives for the schools. October 22nd is a subset of the humanities Germanic studies, classics, romance studies, philosophy, history, medieval studies, and linguistics. And I'll send the field reps save the date, basically, if you could forward that to your colleagues. And then November 12th will be the vet school, the business school, and the law school. And third, I know 2 weeks ago I said I would send you the little survey I wanted to do by last week, but obviously that couldn't happen. But I did finish it and get it approved by some of my board members this week. So I will, tomorrow, I have time, I'll send out an email to the field reps if you could forward that along. And if you guys have any questions or suggestions, just let me know.
Thank you very much. So, with that, we'll move on to new business, which first will be for discussion and approval of GPSA Resolution 1, resolution approving the GPSA Charter Bylaws 2015 to 2019.
You can't really see the screen. I'm just going to save the light in the shot. You can go
what you may have picked up, and those were all just grammatical stuff. Todd is a resident proofreader, and he made some good points, and we corrected a few things. And this is only, it doesn't change the content, it's just to bring things into line with our standard formatting. And so that's all going to be considered as one amendment, and then we'll do the meaty stuff after that.
So, I'm proposing my office grammatical and spelling changes for this thing to be considered as a single amendment.
Second for that motion.
Thank you.
Okay, so there is an amendment on the floor. Well, there's a resolution on the floor. Now there is an amendment to that resolution on the floor. Let's see. It's really weird that I can't look at it on the screen.
Hold on. You do your thing.
Okay, so, Todd, do you know which change there?
You need to change the header. There are a lot of things that are not semicolons.
Size,
put
semicolons after things,
and
the period.
I literally change no letters, just punctuation and spacing.
There we go.
Okay.
All right.
So
lots of font changes, semicolon changes.
And all the content stuff is different.
That's another one there.
Okay. Yep.
So, is there any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve the amendment? Is there a second?
Second.
All right. All those. So, voting members, all in favor, please raise your hand.
1, 2, 3, 19, 12.
All right. 12 in favor approving the amendment after resolution. Any opposed? Any abstained? All right. So, we vote 12-0-1. That amendment passed. So, the grammatical change of argument. Okay. And then amendment number 2.
All right, so I think there are a couple things on this amendment. This changes the name to the Academic Integrity Hearing Board instead of the Academic Integrity Hearing Committee. Scroll down a little bit, would you?
We do this a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now that it's
because
widescreen.
Without
a little mark. There's another name change, I think. So that changes the insurance. The Student Insurance Advisory Committee to the Student Health Plan Advisory Committee. Pull down some more. And I think this takes away one that doesn't exist in the middle. I forget which one that was. And it adds the Student Health Plan Advisory Committee. So, so basically it changes a couple of names to what they actually are on the books, and it adds the Student Health Fee Advisory Committee and removes whatever one was in that place that says anything.
Okay. Was there any discussion on the amendment? Is there a motion to approve the amendment?
I should call
the vote. Okay. Second. By placard, all those in favor of approving the amendment, not the resolution. 12, good. And all those opposed, all those abstaining. All right, by 12-0-1, that amendment is also passed. So amendment 3.
What is this?
So it establishes election to district UC rep.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I've made this all up. Now would be the time to raise your concerns if you are not happy with it.
Okay, so I'll go ahead and read it out. It's still a little hard to read. So, following the election of UGIS out each year, but proceeding the election of same committee chairs, representatives of the joint committee of the graduate school shall be elected. The elected representatives shall serve a 2-year term, but there are at any time no more than 2 elected representatives from the GSA. Should either of those VCs become vacant before the end of their term, the vice president for operations may appoint an interim representative. If an election can be held for new representatives to complete the term, an interim representative to the general committee appointed by the vice president for operations is subject to approval of the executive committee. These seats are not transferable.
Yes.
And the first
clause,
it should be
proceeding
to the election, not the hearing. Oh, yeah.
That's
good call.
Well,
I'll amend the amendment, but I'll second that amendment
to the
amendment.
Okay. I have a motion to vote on that.
Second. All right. I think we can do unanimous consent for amendments to amendments. So, by unanimous consent, is there any opposed to approving the amendment to the amendment? And then we'll be back to the amendment itself. All right. So, with unanimous consent, that amendment to the amendment is approved. Any other discussion on this particular amendment?
Yeah, so that's a non-amendment, that's a discussion. So, on the sheet that you handily gave us about the general committee, it says that when the temporary vacancy is deemed an interim appointment, is that supposed to only apply to grad faculty, or does that also apply to grad students, and therefore are we giving ourselves a power that we don't have?
That is an excellent point, because I only saw, actually, I haven't even read that yet, because Jan just provided that. So I'm going, like I said, I basically, and this goes to the rest of the resolution as well, is I basically wrote this by the seat of my pants and based on what the bylaws already had in precedent. And so unless the dean feels strongly that it needs to be this particular way or whatever.
Jen, could you comment on the question?
God, I don't know where that is in the
document. Okay, so it's section 6.
The penultimate sentence,
when a temporary vacancy occurs, the dean makes
an
interim appointment.
Not
clear whether it's referring to
faculty or all the grads. Well, in the past, it's always been faculty vacancy, because we've always allowed GPSA to make their own appointments as student members. And if you think the code of legislation needs to be amended to specify that, otherwise we just, sometimes the code is silent on something, and then we, if it's silent on it, then I would say that, the dean can appoint graduate faculty, but the GPA can make interim appointments for student members.
Okay.
Because that's the way it has operated, but if you would like the graduate faculty code of legislation to reflect that,
sure.
Reflect what I just said, so that it's codified, we can do that.
So
you can ask the GP to do that.
Okay, so then I'll take it that this will not currently be in direct conflict with the existing code of legislation.
Because the code is silent on that.
Okay, that's a good thing to point out.
Any other discussion on this?
Why is the why a 2-year term?
That's just been how they've been 2-year terms up until now.
Okay.
So we're not extending any term in the GC.
It's been staggered 2-year terms.
Okay. I mean, it's just to give some continuity, like, because the university has a lot of terminology, and if you just start out without knowing what it is, you get no context to it, and it's important to have that continuity where people are continuing on from 1 year to another year because the discussion kind of continues on, and so it's good to have one student staggered 2 years.
All the vote. Right. Okay. So by Fikers, this is voting on this amendment. All those in favor? 9, 10, 11, 12. All right. So 12 in favor.
I'm going to have to be
11. Sorry. All right. 11. And any opposed? And any abstaining? So by 11-01. Oh, 11-02, the amendment carries. Okay. So, then Amendment 4, this is just approving Tiffany to finish her term because she was appointed to a 2-year term last year, so she still has one whole year as our representative in GC, but she was not officially elected, which is what's being called for now, so this is simply allowing her to continue in the role she already has.
However, if she were to leave the seat, then we would still sit.
Yeah.
Election.
Yes, by the process which was outlined in the previous clause.
All right. Move to vote.
Okay. Is there a second? All right. Then by Pikert, all those approving the amendment. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Well, yeah, let's do Pikert. Yeah,
there's a factor. Okay, so 14 for most, I see you back there. Okay, so vote of 14, any opposed? And any abstaining? All right, so my vote of 14 is 01, amendment 4 also passed. So, then, the only, that's it for amendments. So.
Wait, oh yeah.
That's just for amendments that were all year from before. That doesn't mean that we are ending all amendments. So, now the resolution itself is on the floor to be discussed. Any other amendments? Any other comments?
The only thing, the GC committee, is there going to be any restriction on who can apply to that position? Are you thinking about it? Is it open to all grad students? Is it?
It says two grad students selected by the GPSA, it doesn't require that the GPSA voting members to field them.
Yeah, but does the GPSA want to have something, or what your ideas are?
Yeah,
there
are requirements over there. So currently open to all students as the charter would be written?
Personnel like that.
Okay, so to clarify, yes. As the way it is written now, it is open to all any and all graduate students.
It just gives us more flexibility. And the chances are, we're going to settle term amongst ourselves, because you have to be present at the meeting when electing people, obviously, to be elected. So, yeah, but it gives us it seems to me it will likely be GPSA members, but I like the fact personally that we're not just let exclusively make it just ourselves.
Any other discussion? Move to call the vote. All right, so the motion to call the vote. Second. All right. So now for a vote on the resolution itself. So, all those in favor, by placard vote. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 14. All right. 14 in favor. Anyone opposed? And anyone abstaining? So, by a vote of 14-0-1. passes, and then so next up that would be resolution 2. Which is simply a resolution approving the budget for the 2015-2016 academic year. This one is pretty short in that English just says we are approving our budget in the attached spreadsheet, which Sid showed us last time. So we will format this to match the proper formatting, but no substance of the wording will change, just the heading and other font changes. So,
Can we just make that a resolution and formally say that, and then we'll say we'll do it later?
Okay, if we can, you can propose an amendment if you like to have it be put into the correct format, rather than meeting forward, rather than me pulling up a template, copying and pasting, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so I'll take an amendment on the floor to place this into the same font and general formatting as the other resolution to keep it consistent throughout the year. Is there a second to that amendment? All right. Any discussion on the amendment?
Move to call the vote.
All right. Just a second for the motion to call the vote. All right. All those in favor of the amendment?
Or the amendment?
I'm fine.
We're just changing the formatting. We're
going to be
signed and we'll do all that stuff. Yeah.
Oh, we're going to do it afterwards. But I'll just make it look at the other resolution. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. I saw her. Okay. Oh, you're right. 13. All opposed. Okay. And all those abstaining. All right. Vote of 14-0-1. The amendment passes. Now the resolution again is on the floor to approve our budget for the 2015-2016
college
and here. All right. So the motion is now vote. Second. All of those in favor. Okay.
I just wanted to register in the discussion section that I think it's worth in the future with these budgetary discussions, considering how much money you actually want to spend on food for this event and for this organization, and whether some of that money might be better spent going to grad student organizations.
Okay. Well, we did have the discussion on all the budgets at the last meeting, and they are basically budgets submitted by the committees themselves. So if we want to think about peeling back the amount of fees that we purchased, it's something that if the individual committee is still struggling about that, I would encourage them to do so. But thank you for that.
I think
should be that after the word resolved be lower case?
We already moved all the votes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's all it's capitalized after the word spot, so these.
Okay.
So
I mean, I just wanted to comment to that. I do agree that we should reduce our food costs as much as possible. And that's something that I am requesting all the chairs to do too. But the one thing is that the amount of programs we have together as a GPSA together is a lot more than how much other groups have. Mm-hmm. So in terms of food cost per event, it's actually quite low. So it's not a ridiculous amount of money.
Okay. And just to comment on that too, we also, all our individual food costs that we calculate out for a committee basis, we hold ourselves to the same amount that we give out to organizations. So if we say that this is how much money you get to have food for at your event, we hold that number for our own events as well. We try not to go beyond that. So for example, if we don't go to Bands, you can get a nice lunch.
Okay. So the vote has been called. So all those in favor of this resolution, if I can vote. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. All those opposed? 1. All those abstaining? 1. So by votes of 13-1-1, the resolution passed. Alright. So, with that, we will then move into elections. So first, this one should now read, and my computer was bad at setting up presentations on it now, but now this is the Vice President for Communication. So, now at this time, I'll open up the floor to nomination for volunteers for the position of Vice President for Communication.
Oh, come on, guys. Just a clarifier, this is only for voting members, right?
This goes to voting, as it's written in the charter now, it says voting members, no voting room in the town, still representatives, and still representatives, same as the other.
Okay.
Yes, voting members are called first to run. Or field representatives, okay, I'll open the floor to the nominations from field representatives who would like to serve as vice president for communications.
You're not that bad.
It will not be a difficult job. Okay, so, seeing no nominations, we will keep this position vacant for now. You will chair the communications chair.
You're now a member of the executive board, so you will sit up here with us. That means you. There's some privileges that go along with that as far as we meet with the dean and other people, which is pretty exciting. You would, as far as like how the communications committee is run, it's kind of up to you. That is something that's kind of in flux and you can establish that. But the only, I think, official charge is really that you're supposed to like create or facilitate effective communications between the GTSA and then like the field organization and graduate students in general and stuff like that. So it's pretty open-ended.
One of the things that was brought up, I believe, at the Diana discussed last year was communication, difficulty communication between GTSA and the community at large. And so this is why we took a look at our communication and revamped it in this way, hoping that by bringing the first step level of the exec, it would be more involved in discussion and be better equipped to communicate with the community partners. So it is a very important position. Not the most, it's, you know, the amount of work that it takes and the amount of work you put into it. So, right. If there are no nominations, then we will hold the position open until our next meeting and nominate again then. So I encourage everyone here to consider it. If you're on the fence, think it sounds like something you might want to do, feel free to come talk to us. We will. Yep. So, right. With that, we'll move on to the election of the General Committee representative. Sid, do you want to say a little something about the journey outgoing?
I think, Tiffany, do you have? Okay, I mean, basically the GC, from last meeting, what I said, the GC is the committee that runs the grad school, especially in terms of academics. So if there's a new academic program that needs to be approved, that goes to the GC. The GC has to see to it that it fits all the criteria required by the New York State law, the New York State Education Department, things like that. It also does a lot of other things related to grad students. Like they're responsible for the survey too, right? The grad student survey or something.
No, not really. We have staff in the graduate school
okay.
Do that.
But then they but anything and everything that applies to graduate students in terms of their academic and whatever Cornell can do to make their life better, all that goes through the GC. And like important discussions like tuition fee for like 6th and 7th year grad students, that is discussed in the GC. Including discussions about the stipend that was like now unified between the TAs and RAs, those kind of discussions also happened in the GC meeting. So it's a really important avenue. One of the more powerful committees on that you can serve on. And so I would really recommend that if you're interested about anything to do with graduate student life, you should be on this committee. So please nominate yourself.
Okay. I just want to point out this is a 2-year committee. So if you're a 1-year master's student, unless you feel really strongly about it, you probably don't want to show.
Also, if you're hoping to graduate in spring, then I know that's usually a flux for graduate students, but that's your plan also.
Yes.
How
about
nominate Anna Rima?
Hi,
sir. Okay. Are there any other nominations?
Could nominate Jesse because he applied for it. So,
seeing as it is, nomination.
All right.
Okay, then. Any other nominations?
Not for that.
All right. Seeing none, would you like to give a statement about yourself?
Relevant experience. I've spent the past 7 months reaching out to students across disciplines and across American universities to create a grad association on the issues of sexual assault and harassment in academia. This past year, I've worked with faculty and staff at Cornell to run 2 interdisciplinary conferences and worked to make student voices heard in my own field. So we actually have a field committee now and a monthly roundtable and an actual listserv and web pages and such. So I'm used to working with different disciplines, staff, faculty, all of the above. My personal crusades are inclusiveness and mental health in academia, but and the difficulties that grads face in straddling being workers but also being students. But I'm also very aware of the continued drift of academia towards fewer years of funding for grad students and more adjunctification, which I think a lot of us worry about in our future. I would like to push against these and to lean on Cornell to promote more alt-ac resources. Thank you.
Okay, so the motion to call the vote. As there are no other nominees, then I would ask that we approve by unanimous consent. Voice vote. So all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? All right. And congratulations. And with that, we'll move into open forum, and I have one for open forum, actually, and that is that the National Association of Graduate Professional Students is having their national conference, and I have something on the phone. Okay. So the national meeting for the National Association of Graduate Professional Students is October 29th through November 1st. The NAGPS is the GPSA for all grad students, and professional students across the country. And Tiffany has already volunteered, or hopefully we'll be going to that. We probably could afford to send another student along. So if you're interested, please contact me. It's a great opportunity for networking. And we've now gotten word that the spring legislative action days is currently being worked on, and the advocacy committee, I'll be turning to them for organizing that, but that's basically we send a group of representatives down to D.C. to lobby on behalf of grad students. So something to keep on your radar for March. Right. Anything else for open forum?
So I would like urge you to amend the procedures in section 4.08 so that you can just include grammar change, like suspend that part of Robert's Rules, so you can just include grammar changes as like friendly amendments.
Yeah.
It would save you a lot of time.
Okay.
Just a thought. And the other thing is, I'm pretty sure the motion to call the vote requires a 2/3 majority to do that, usually. Might be wrong about that, but I don't know. It was just weird to me, like, sitting here, why someone's always moving to call the vote when the chair can see the people already.
By past practice, we've always had a called question.
Okay.
I think
right.
I can double check Robert's rules as to whether or not that is appropriate practice. There is not an approach that we might have here for 5 minutes.
adjourn?
Second.
All right. And we are adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.